Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are wrestling with a topic that really affects everyone, doesn't it? Whether you're a parent, student, employer, or, you know, just someone who went through the system. Education.
That's right.
We're diving into Sir Ken Robinson and Lou Aronica's, well, really foundational work, Creative Schools, the grassroots revolution. That's transforming education.
And it's such a crucial deep dive. I mean, the central crisis the book gets into is pretty profound. We're seeing widespread student disengagement, right? Teachers burning out at, frankly, alarming rates. And we often graduate young people who just feel ill-equipped for the kind of dynamic, creative, fast-changing world we live in now, the 21st century.
Yeah, the old system just feels broken.
It really does. And the authors, they don't really pull any punches about why that is. They frame the whole crisis as needing this fundamental shift. We have to move away, they argue, from the old industrial model.
That standardized sort of one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly. Treating kids like widgets on an assembly line, we need to move towards what they call the organic model, something that really honors, you know, individual curiosity, creativity, diverse talents, natural talents.
Yeah, the book basically argues that the philosophy underpinning that industrial model, you know, standardization, conformity, all inherited from the 19th century. That's the main reason education is struggling today.
So our mission here is to unpack what that transformation looks like and maybe why it matters to, well, to you listening in your own life and work.
Okay, so you really can't talk about creative education without talking about the late Sir Ken Robinson. He's almost synonymous with the topic.
He really is.
Sir Ken was, I mean, arguably one of the most influential voices in modern educational thinking. Professor Emeritus at the University of Warwick, knighted back in 2003 for his services to education and the arts.
Right.
But his global impact really exploded after that 2006 TED Talk, Do Schools Kill Creativity? I think most people have heard
of it. Oh, yeah, it's legendary. Still the most watched TED Talk ever, isn't it?
It is. And it really set the stage for everything he did afterward. He spent decades advising governments, organizations all over the world on curriculum, on reform. It gave him this unique sort of global perspective on just how, well, how broken the system often is.
And collaborating with Lou Aronica, that seems like a key piece here too.
Oh, absolutely. A brilliant choice. Aronica is this really accomplished editor and author. He helped translate Robinson's sometimes complex academic ideas and those global insights, which could be a bit overwhelming, you know, into a narrative that's just incredibly accessible, compelling.
So what you get in creative schools is this kind of rare blend then. Robinson's deep academic global view of the education crisis, but paired with Aronica's skill in telling a great story, making those complex ideas actually stick with you.
Precisely. They were just uniquely positioned to critique the whole global system and really crucially to show us a path forward, a path that, as they argue, is already being walked in many places.
Okay, so the book kicks off by really examining the current system, right, critically. Yeah. They argue this industrial model, the rigid curricula, the single idea ability, the obsession with standardized testing.
Yeah.
It's not just inefficient, they say. It's actively harmful because it just ignores the natural way humans learn.
Which is messy.
Right.
And highly individual.
Exactly. And that's where the organic model comes in as the, well, the necessary solution. Education, they stress, must recognize learning as this natural creative process. It varies uniquely person to person.
So it's about nurturing different kinds of intelligence, different learning styles.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Students aren't products we stamped out identically. They're unique potentials just waiting for the right conditions to be cultivated. Like a garden, not a factory.
Okay, conceptually, that organic model sounds beautiful. A garden where every unique potential gets nurtured. But let's be real for a second. Doesn't that just run smack into the wall of accountability? Bureaucracy. How do you scale something so personalized?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
The industrial system persists precisely because it seems easy to measure, easy to manage politically.
And that's the friction the book tackles head-on.
Yeah.
They argue that the perception that the industrial system gives real accountability is, well, kind of an illusion, especially when you look at the high failure rates, the burnout rates.
Good point.
The ultimate goal, they say, is to shift schools away from being institutions focus solely on narrow test scores, move them towards becoming creative communities.
Communities.
Yeah. And they provide the evidence the grassroots revolution bit, showing communities, teachers, parents collaborating to create meaningful experiences, experiences that are both accountable and personalized. It's not an either-or.
Right. So, understanding the scale of change needed, chapter one, back to basics, it really lays out the evidence of failure, doesn't it?
It does. It talks about chronic student stress, massive teacher burnout, high dropout rates. And the key point is, the problem isn't usually the students or the teachers themselves. It's the flawed industrial approach.
Treating students like these homogenous units.
Exactly. Whose potential gets stifled because they're forced onto this assembly line built for, you know, a completely different era.
Okay, one of the most provocative parts for me is the challenge to traditional ideas about intelligence. That's in the chapter Natural Born Learners.
Right.
They point out how conventional schooling pretty much only rewards linguistic and mathematical intelligence. But the world needs so much more than that. Like, if you're brilliant at coding but maybe struggle with literature, the system usually just highlights your deficits, right?
It absolutely does. And they dive straight into Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. They talk about musical, kinesthetic, interpersonal, you know, all these other forms of intelligence.
Which are often ignored or even seen as distractions in traditional schools.
Worse than ignored. The radical point here is that the current system doesn't just neglect these other talents. It often actively punishes strengths that aren't linguistic or mathematical. It defines those students as somehow less capable.
Wow.
Robinson and Aronica are crystal clear on this. Creativity is as important as literacy and numeracy, and it should have the same status in the curriculum, period.
Okay, so if the student's learning is meant to be personalized and creative, that fundamentally changes the teacher's role, right? That's covered in the art of teaching. The teacher can't just be like a technician delivering content from a script.
No way. Great teaching, they argue, is a creative artistic practice. Mm. It involves understanding and responding to the unique needs of, you know, maybe dozens of individual students in your classroom.
That sounds incredibly demanding.
It is. And it requires systems that support teacher development and, this is critical, teacher autonomy.
Yeah.
The micromanagement, the overprescription in teaching methods, that's a huge driver of the burnout we talked about.
Right. So if we want creative students,
we need creative, empowered teachers. Teachers who are facilitators, mentors, coaches, not just lecturers following top-down directives, often driven by politics.
Okay, but if the teacher is the artist, what happens when that artist is forced to use standardized tools and judged purely by a standardized output? That brings us right to the thorny issue of testing and curriculum in chapters 6 and 7.
Yep, the elephant in the room, standardized testing.
The authors really critique the over-reliance on it. Their argument is, basically, it creates this culture of fear. It narrows the curriculum massively, often pushing out arts, humanities, PE, recess.
The very things that foster creativity and well-being.
Exactly. And they argue it demonstrably fails to improve actual long-term educational outcomes, real learning.
But testing persists, doesn't it? Because policymakers, administrators, they crave that predictability. Comparability. It gives this illusion of control, of accountability.
So how do Robinson and Aronica counter that?
They advocate for integrated learning environments, places that genuinely develop the full range of human capabilities. They want to shift the focus from just measuring failure after the fact to authentically supporting success along the way. They show that accountability can look very different.
And crucially, they don't just offer philosophy. They pack the book with these incredible case studies, examples of transformation already happening, proving the organic model can work, even scale.
Yes, like the high-tech, high-network in California. Its phone is for project-based learning. They really tear down those artificial subject silos.
How so?
Well, students work on complex, often real-world projects that demand collaboration, creative thinking, and applying knowledge from, you know, science, math, history, art, all together, not just in separate 50-minute blocks.
Makes sense. Real problems aren't neatly divided by subject.
Exactly. Or think about the Tinkering School, founded by Guy Vertulli. It lets kids work with real tools, dangerous tools sometimes. They embrace risk. They learn through direct, hands-on building and experimenting.
That sounds amazing and probably terrifying for some parents and administrators.
Probably. But that environment explicitly teaches that making mistakes, even breaking things sometimes, is essential to learning. That's fundamentally opposed to the get-it-right-the-first-time standardization mindset.
And we can't skip Finland's system, can we? It gets referenced so often as this global success story.
Right. It operates much more on that organic model.
Mm-hmm.
Minimal standardized testing, high academic standards, yes, but crucially, incredible levels of autonomy and respect granted to his teachers.
So it's a systemic example of policy actually supporting genuine creative development.
Absolutely. It shows it can be done at a national level.
Okay, if we zoom out a bit and look at the core themes running through the book, that contrast you mentioned earlier really stands out. Industrial versus organic.
It's the central metaphor, really.
Yeah.
The factory assembly line versus the garden.
Yeah. And it makes you think, doesn't it, about your own work or learning environment? Does it feel more like a factory pushing for conformity, standardized outputs? Or does it feel more like a garden where unique potential gets the right conditions to flourish?
That gardening metaphor is just so powerful. It shifts the purpose from being extractive, getting results out, to being generative. We're growing something unique.
Totally. Then theme number two has to be that creativity is core.
Unwavering on that. Mm-hmm. Creativity isn't some nice-to-have extra subject you do on a Friday afternoon if there's time.
Right.
It's a fundamental human capacity. It drives innovation, problem-solving, fulfillment in every area of life. Imagine if creativity was assessed with the same rigor and importance as math.
Wow. The whole culture of schooling would have to change overnight, wouldn't it?
Completely. Which leads into theme three, school culture and climate. They stress that real transformation isn't just about new textbooks or tech. It's about changing the climate.
What do they mean by climate?
The underlying values, the level of trust, the collaboration between staff, students, parents. It's about moving away from these often quite authoritarian environments towards ones built on trust, where students feel safe enough to take intellectual risks, to ask weird questions, to fail without being shamed.
That sounds like a much healthier environment for everyone, not just the students.
Definitely. And finally, there's the really hopeful message of the grassroots revolution. They emphasize that change doesn't have to wait for slow, talked-down policy shifts from government.
Which can feel impossible sometimes.
Right. They argue that local innovation, driven by courageous educators, involved parents, supportive communities, that's where the real transformation is happening. Mm-hmm. It's hugely empowering. It shows that even within a massive, seemingly rigid system, individual and community action can make a profound difference.
And the way they write about this stuff, the power of their language is part of why the book hits so hard, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
There are some lines that just stick with you. I think the quote that really defines the whole mission is, "Creativity is as important in education as literacy, and we should treat it with the same status."
That's it right there. A direct hit on the status hierarchy that puts math and language arts on a pedestal and everything else somewhere lower.
Exactly. And tied to that is the idea. Human communities depend upon a diversity of talent, not a singular conception of ability. That's the moral case against standardization, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We need everyone's unique gifts to thrive, to solve complex problems together.
It's not just inefficient to ignore diverse talents. It's actually detrimental to society.
Right. And they're also very clear about the depth of change needed, Robinson wrote. The fact is that given the challenges we face, education doesn't need to be reformed. It needs to be transformed.
Hmm. Yeah, no tinkering around the edges.
No. Incremental changes won't fix what they see as a fundamentally flawed engine. And one more about leadership. The role of a creative leader is not to have all the ideas. It's to create a culture where everyone can have ideas and feel that they're valued. That applies to school principals, CEOs, anyone in a leadership role.
That's huge. Shifting from top-down director to culture cultivator. So thinking about real-life applications, this book isn't just for educators, is it?
Not at all. If you're a professional, maybe you lead a team or an organization, you can absolutely apply this organic model to things like professional development or team dynamics.
Now so.
Well, organizations often fall into that same trap of standardized training, right? Assuming everyone learns the same way at the same pace. We need to move away from that factory model in the workplace, too. Create environments that honor diverse learning styles, encourage creative problem solving, maybe use project-based collaboration like High Tech High does.
Makes sense. More personalized, more engaging, and for parents or guardians listening.
The practical tip is simple, but maybe hard to do in practice. Try to look beyond just the grades and the standardized test scores. Advocate for positive changes in your local school, sure, but also focus on nurturing creativity at home.
Like unstructured playtime.
Yes, unstructured time. Encouraging deep interests, letting kids pursue passions even if they aren't academic, and maybe being okay with a bit of risk-taking, making messes, making mistakes, seeing those as learning opportunities.
That's a big shift for a lot of us, conditioned by the old system. And what about for students themselves or even lifelong learners?
For them, the takeaway is really about taking ownership of your learning. Don't just passively receive what's offered. seek out those passions, especially the ones outside of the traditionally tested subjects, and actively look for ways to apply what you're learning to real-world problems or projects. Be the advocate for that kind of learning in your own life.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what stands out to you as the ultimate necessary paradigm shift from this deep dive? What's the biggest takeaway?
For me, it really boils down to that shift in perception. Moving from seeing students as these empty vessels, passive recipients of knowledge, to seeing them as active creators of their own learning experiences. It's fundamentally about honoring human diversity and potential as the primary goal, not standardization and efficiency metrics.
Yeah. What surprised me most, I think, was the sheer volume of evidence they present showing this transformation is already working. In pockets, yes, but all over the world. It's not some utopian fantasy waiting for a massive policy overhaul.
The grassroots thing.
Exactly. And the power of community partnership seems key. When parents, businesses, community members get truly integrated into the school's mission, that seems to be the engine really driving this change.
That's a great point. And it leaves us, and you listening, with maybe a final provocative question to chew on. How do we as a society really ensure we are developing the full spectrum of human intelligence, mm-hmm. including those crucial creative capacities we need, not just to, you know, find jobs in the future, but to actually invent the future itself?
How indeed. A question worth pondering. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.